for an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Confederations Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Today, Gauguin, Jacques Brel, Marlon Brando's third wife, and Gauguin, your boys took a hell of a beating as Spain put 10 past Tahiti, leaving canoe-loving funsters in paddleless creek paradigm. Pod salutes the Spaniards and asks, standing ovation? They never do that for Scotland. Meanwhile, just the 3 goals for Nigeria and Uruguay, but there's a great four-line performance that for once doesn't involve Suarez in the penalty box. There's a bit of post, tweet, and Saturday's humdingers too. Previewed for you on Confederations Cup Football Daily. Good morning, everyone. Or afternoon, or possibly evening. I don't know. Hello. Hello in football land. It's always football o'clock for Scott Murray.
Hello, James.
Hi, Scott. Lovely to see you back.
And you?
Have you been watching the Confederations Cup?
I have been watching it, yes.
Hey.
Yes. And enjoying it.
Good. Some bits more than others.
Well, everything I've seen so far.
Everything?
I'm already excited about the World Cup next year. I think it's going to be a good World Cup for the first time in about 20 years.
Really? Has it been that long?
Yes, I think
so. 20 years ago? What are we now? 2000?
Well, maybe the France World Cup was pretty good.
Yeah, that had its moments.
I've been droning on about this for some time, so I won't continue.
Right, okay.
On this particular pod.
All right. Also in today, Owen Gibson.
Hello there.
Hi, Owen. You excited about the World Cup next year?
I am excited about the World Cup next year.
Are you enjoying
assuming it takes place, you know.
Given that. Yeah, hey.
But yeah, no, Confederations Cup's been good, isn't it? It's been, actually, the football's been better, more exciting than the actual World Cup. Late, as Scott says.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Paul McInnes.
Hiya. I'm back.
Yeah?
Because of Tahiti. The honorary Tahitian.
That's what's done it, you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think I have the same kind of skin colour, skin tone.
Right.
You know, and I'm good in a rowing boat.
Good. Excellent. Who stayed up late for Nigeria, Uruguay? Scott Murray.
Yeah, I did, on account of having not much of a life, unlike Paul.
I have got a great life.
Go on, what were you doing while Uruguay playing Nigeria?
I went to bed at 10 because I was so tired.
Well, it's not a bad shout.
Having such a good life.
Yeah.
But I waited about 70 minutes for level 4 ball and sleep.
But I stayed up to watch this game.
Right. You saw some good goals.
Yeah, there were. And Uruguay was strange because I can't quite work out whether they're trying to spook Brazil into thinking it's 1950 again by playing exceptionally badly a year before in Brazil, which they did. They lost 5-1.
Good knowledge.
In Brazil in 1949. But they turned this one around thanks mainly to Forlan's amazing goal, which again I thought was trying to spook Brazil a bit because it was a kind of bizarro Carlos Alberto in the World Cup final goal, but on the other wing. He sort of hoved into view from the left and just thrashed it in. It was a fantastic goal.
I'm not sure what... Very ersatz Alberto. Yeah.
Just trying to enjoy things, James.
No, I appreciate that. And it was great to see... Of course, it was Carlos Alberto, not Carlo. It was sort of Carlos Alberto. It was nice to see Diego Forlan returning in such terrific fashion in his 100th appearance for
Indeed,
Uruguay.
Yeah, and you know, you forget. Well, I'd certainly forgotten that, you know, how good Uruguay were during the last World Cup, and you know, kind of it was good to see Forlan playing well again. The missing shocking chances as well. You know, didn't they? It could have been.
Well, yeah, Cavani was all over the shop, but I mean, I thought that was quite nice as well. The way he was sort of flaying one on ones miles into the stands, and it was kind of that was a good old school South American feel to it, where that. I'm just getting this sort of overall sense that they're saying, right, well, the World Cup's been in Europe for quite a long time, hasn't been in South America since the late 70s, and they're thinking, right, it's coming home now, and when it's here, we do things like this. Flaying things left.
Spectacular goals, yeah, and shank it to the stands.
Yeah. And it was great fun, in a sort of subdued way, but it was a good match.
Right, of course, you were also witness to history, the momentous event that was John Obi Mikel and the back of the net coming together.
Yes, I was actually out of the room.
Oh, no way, Scott.
I saw that one. It was a good goal as well, wasn't it?
It's terrific.
Never seen anything like that for Chelsea, of course. But, you know.
Well,
now he's leaving. He must have decided to find
a shooting. Is he leaving? Is he?
Looks like it's going to Galatasaray, doesn't it?
That's right. Yeah. That's what he seemed, or his people seemed to be saying. No player had more shots without hitting the target a single time in the Premier League last season than John Obi Mikel, or Mikel John Obi, or Obi Mikel John. 44 shots in his last 97 Premier League appearances.
zero goals, Paul.
Yeah, but you very rarely see him standing in the 18-yard box to shoot, though, do you?
You very rarely see him move.
True. Well, that's true. And it was also the two things combined. He looked agile and he was in the opposition penalty area for that goal. It was very nice. He's looked interesting in that position for Nigeria in these two games.
What did you make of Nigeria? Lots of youthful promise there?
To be honest, they didn't make a huge impression on me. They didn't play well at all, really. And it was just more as to whether Uruguay were going to be able to shift into gear, which they kind of eventually did. They sort of rallied it right at the end, Nigeria, and there was a sort of moment, there was a scramble in the box with about 20 seconds to go, but apart from that, they didn't seem to do very much.
So pretty dreadful against Tahiti as well, weren't they? I mean, they haven't exactly ripped up trees so far. No, they haven't. Well, to stay in the Confederations Cup, of course, Nigeria must now beat Spain. Yep. While Uruguay take on Tahiti. Now, that is interesting because everyone's been a little bit delicate with the Tahitians so far. But if there's a side that could go out there and really rip them to shreds, it's Suarez and co, surely.
Well, you would think so. Suarez wasn't all that last night, to be honest. And we mentioned Cavani had a couple of one-on-ones. He certainly had one one-on-one, which he flayed into the stands, and there was a header, which he tried to...
The old Kevin Keegan, didn't he?
Yeah, he tried to sort of guide it in, and it didn't really work. But you do get the sense, again, that if it kind of clicks for them... I mean, in Tahiti, obviously, are not the tightest at the back.
That's true. Although, here's a stat.
Although the keeper was good. Yes.
Did you like the keeper?
I very much like the keeper yesterday.
I like the keeper because I think he needs to chuck a rick in order to get himself psyched up. So he would do something absolutely abysmal.
Well, the goal in 3 minutes was pretty bad start,
yeah,
wasn't it?
And then the next minute he'd be kind of really bravely rushing out and closing down a shot and claiming it. I like the way he also celebrated things that weren't really his responsibility, like a missed penalty.
By Fernando Torres, four goals, man of the match. And still everyone's laughing at him.
It's a classic Torres performance in a way, isn't it? You know, kind of he scores four goals and yet everyone's still talking about the missed penalty and the ones. And him and Villa seem to be having a competition, didn't they, to basically see who could score the most goals. They went and passed to each other. They had a little row about the penalty. It was quite interesting.
Torres did try pass to him twice but didn't connect.
I thought he purposely passed badly to
gotcha.
Him.
Gotcha.
Possibly. Richard Hughes tweeting during the game, nothing would look out of place if Torres was wearing white here. This was just before he scored, I think, his first goal. But there was that kind of impression about him, that despite the four goals. So
he looked sort of tentative, didn't he? It looked like new Torres rather than old Torres, certainly. But then he did score four goals. So.
Right. Climby CA says Spain's backups are terrifying. Were they allowed to field multiple teams? I could legitimately see a 2014 semi-final that consisted of Spain, Germany, Argentina and Spain's bench.
There was that moment when Iniesta came on, didn't you? And you thought, oh, come on. Harsh.
That is the thing about that team, and particularly when you're talking about intensive end of seasons where it's going to run, the tournament's going to run very close together. They can rotate and they can refresh, whereas Uruguay, their front three, as great as they are, there's going to be a lot of reliance on them.
Some of those players that haven't perhaps played quite as well for Spain recently, like Silva's, looked really good last night. When some fall out of form, you're right, others do come in, don't they? And Juan Mata's playing his 398th game in a row, whatever, you know, at a time when we're worrying about whether our players should be playing five games before a qualifier against.
They've also got more of a mixture now as well. I mean, Javi Martinez is such an elegant ball player, but, you know, gives them a different option in the way they shape their midfield.
Thought he looked really good, didn't he?
Yeah.
Do you want to hear a crazy stat? This one's from Opta Joe. Tahiti have averaged a higher passing accuracy at the 2013 Confederations Cup than Uruguay in their opening two games. How about that?
Well, that's good. That's good news for them.
It is, isn't it? It is. Let's give them a round of applause and a pat on the back for that. The standing ovation at the end was a bit perplexing, wasn't it? This is a team that had just turned up, lost 10-0.
They were the people's choice, weren't they?
I'm a bit befuddled by all of that. I mean, it was great when they scored the goal, but they're basically not very good and at the Confederations Cup, and I don't know why that's meritorious of
Well, it depends
kind of
on whether you think that their qualifying for the Confederations Cup was an achievement or not.
Well, that was an achievement, and that could be applauded. But then doing really not very well when they get
there. They get exposed to a bigger audience, than they end up kind of playing New Caledonia in the final or whatever. So they get their moment in the sun, and that was it.
Yeah.
I think also the keeper managed to play the crowd incredibly well because he made a half decent save from a free kick from I think it was Veer, but I'm not
sure.
Yeah,
that's right, it was Veer.
But the crowd went up, and I think something just clicked then when he got the reception for that he pointed to the heavens, and then soon after he was sort of playing it for laughs when You know, there were near misses and things like that.
It was testimonial-esque behaviour towards him, wasn't it?
So, you know, I think, you know, it was football is fun, which is a, you know, new concept.
Yeah, I'm not sure about it at all. In the meantime, what wasn't fun was police clashing with protesters once again. Police using tear gas. And after the small concession over bus fares, the protests back in force in even bigger force.
Well, it's about much more than bus fares now. I think it's about much more than bus fares or indeed expensive stadiums. You know, it's a very complex scenario there now. And it's kind of, but what's interesting to me reading all Jonathan Watt's dispatches from the ground, it's the extent to which the young people of Brazil have now sort of taken to the streets for the first time and found they quite like it. You know, so I think this will just build and build. You know, there's another week to go of the Confederations Cup, and it's going to be a backdrop all the way up to the World Cup now.
Mm. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Speaking of marching about bad management and colossal waste of money and price hikes, there was something going on in London.
That's right. Not quite the millions taken to the streets in Brazil. There's about 200 football fans marching down Baker Street to Gloucester Place to protest about high ticket prices. But I thought that was interesting too because, you know...
Sorry, this was on Wednesday.
This was on Wednesday.
And which football clubs were represented? Pretty much all of them?
There was about 40-odd, and right. That was the most interesting thing about it, that you had sort of Liverpool fans marching alongside Manchester United fans and Spurs and Arsenal fans marching together and so on. So, you know, normally these things get derailed because inter-club rivalries start to sort of, you know, pick them apart. But I think something started last season with the Emirates protests and so on, which has started to build. And I think there's two things going on. One is the specific qualms over price hikes and over how much people are actually paying to get into the game and whether or not we can have price cuts for away matches and all that sort of stuff. But there's that sort of general feeling of dislocation as well, and people, you know, chanting "We hate Sky Sports" and "We hate Sky Sports" as they march down Baker Street was quite interesting.
How many of them have Sky Sports subscriptions?
All of them, I suspect. Yeah, exactly. And how many of them will continue to go to buy season tickets at their clubs at the expense of almost anything else in their lives? Probably all of them, I suspect, as well. So that's the difficulty, is that, you know, kind of most of them ultimately won't stop going, which is probably right. The only thing that clubs are taking notice of.
What did you think about the numbers? Were you expecting more people on Wednesday?
No, I thought 200 for a sort of Wednesday afternoon during the working week wasn't too
bad. It's not huge, though, is it?
It's not a huge... No, it's not gonna change the world.
But, right. What happened? Were they ushered into the Premier League?
I mean, the Premier League played it quite well. About right. Four or five representatives were taken in and granted their sort of hour and a half with Scudamore. And the Premier League is very good at sort of dissembling, really. So it said, oh, it's not really our fault. It's back to the clubs. It's for them to decide on their pricing. But we agree with what you're saying. We feel your pain and we accept that clubs need a local fan base as well as a sort of global one.
Realistically, is there anything that you think might come out of this kind of movement? The 20 is plenty. Do you think that could...
I don't think you'll see a blanket sort of edict come down. Although, you know, if the Premier League clubs can get together to control wages, there's no reason why they can't get together to control ticket prices. But I think you'll see more things along the lines of Arsenal's teen section, which they've got next year, which kind of basically offers cut price season tickets for teenagers in a particular... I mean, I think they recognise there is an issue here with bringing on the next generation and all the rest of it. So I think you'll see small steps towards solving it, but nothing big or blanket.
Mm. All right. And another event planned in the near future? Is there anything coming up?
Well, this is what I was saying to them. I think, you know, kind of for it to work, it needs to be a coordinated campaign, and they need to either build on this with more protests or do eye-catching things that are captured on the TV cameras, like turning their backs or whatever else, you know, to kind of to make their point. Because, you know, without that, it'll just seem very diffuse and everyone has a slightly different argument and everybody wants slightly different things.
Right. And what did they say?
They said yes. That's exactly what we should do. You're right.
Exactly. Cool. You could be the Mance Ryder of
that battle is taken by David Conn. He is very much there.
All right.
The cool. Sacred texts of David Conn.
Woof. Now, a post, just one actually. It's Bernard Shakey. We were talking about who has the biggest arse in football. He says, biggest arse in football.
Hulk.
He says it is, of course, Sepp Blatter. Ah. So he wins that one. But there's plenty of other news we should discuss. For example, today's reports that Higuain has agreed terms, but a difference of opinion about what terms he's agreed, but they're big terms anyway, with Arsenal, surprisingly big terms for the Gunners. About 130,000 a week, 150,000 a week, a lot. And Arsenal hoping to get the deal done so he can come and join them on their pre-season tour.
That's right. I mean, I think the pressure's built now to the point where, you know, even Wenger has been forced to concede that they need to smash the well, even Wenger and even Gazidis have been forced to concede they need to smash their wage structure and get in a big name who can A, appease the fans, and B, get them some of the goals they need.
Is it, how much of this stuff that now the financial shackles are off, how much of that actually applies? Or is that just a convenient argument for the fact they're going to change? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, they've always had money to spend. That's the thing about Arsenal, you know, kind of the you can look at this two ways. One, they've always had money in the bank to spend, and B, Wenger hasn't wanted to spend it because I think deep down, Arsene Wenger's always felt that modern football's slightly distasteful and the players don't deserve the ridiculous amounts of money that's splashed around anyway. So, but I think even he's reached a point now where he accepts that, you know, if he's going to carry on in the job, then he's going to have to play by the rules of the game as they now are post-Chelsea and Manchester City. So I think, yeah, there's two things that have happened. A, money has always been there, but B, they now feel more confident about spending it because the stadium is paid back and all those things.
Do you think that's going to be one last roll of the dice for Wenger? Because it was there was sort of thought that this might be his last season just gone. For a while, people were saying that.
I think
and obviously he's decided to have another push for it.
Well, he still had a year on the contract, which I think was always...
So I wonder whether he's thought, well, you know, like you say, actually, gloves are off, I'll give it a go this way and just have one last...
Well, see, also Ferguson Van Persie, I suppose, you know, kind of he had it in his mind, well, I'm going to give it one last push, you better give me somebody who's going to deliver something this season. I wonder if there's a little bit of that at play as well, yeah.
Mm. Although, there's still very much the question about Real Madrid having to sanction this without a manager. A lot of people suggesting that until they get the manager in, they can't rubber stamp or indeed agree terms themselves with Arsenal. That's still very much in... flux, given that PSG haven't released Carlo Ancelotti yet because they still haven't done a deal with anyone. Apparently, Laurent Blanc is now the guy. Laurent Blanc. So
they're working their way down the list, aren't they? They'll be at Steve McLaren before.
Oh. Yeah. Good. And Wayne Rooney. Wayne Rooney, Emirates.
Well, he's been linked with everyone else. I mean, why? I mean, I can't quite see him there. I can't see him there with.
But Wayne they've both there. Made kind of cooing noises at each other.
They have, but, you know, I think I find it very difficult to believe that Manchester United sell him to another English club.
And they might need the money to pay for, gasp, a midfielder, Thiago Alcantara.
Yeah, although there was quite a persuasive line from Gerard Piquet about that when he said that Xavi had to wait his turn and he ended up defining an era, so maybe Thiago should cool his jets a little bit and hang on.
Ooh. Is Thiago going to cool his jets or not?
Well, and you know, I think he's keen to play. So, and he hasn't met that clause in his contract, which allowed, you know, there's obviously suggested that for a time they've been thinking they want it. He wants to be in the first team and isn't prepared to wait. But, you know, is he going to end up coming to United and then doing what Cesc Fabregas did a few seasons ago and wanting to go back and complete the dream?
And PK himself, of course. How big a signing would this be for Manchester United?
It would be a big signing, but still a relatively unproven player to fit in that, you know, to fit in that role.
What role exactly are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about talking somebody, about somebody, the mobile, the Scholes role, you know,
right.
Somebody
linked to the play. Yeah,
the mobile role in the midfield too.
All right. Well, a lot of Manchester United fans out there with fingers crossed on that one. As we head into Saturday's action in the Confederations Cup. Now, meantime, back across the world in Brazil, Saturday's matches in the Confederations Cup look pretty tasty. Yes, sirree. You've got Japan-Mexico. Mexico yet to score a goal from open play in this tournament.
Indeed. While Japan have been quite exciting, you know, without Ashley Mellinson.
Effervescent.
Indeed, yeah. Mm. And again, they were great during the 2010 World Cup. I mean, Honda and Co, weren't they? You know, so it's been good to watch them again, even though their defending hasn't always been quite up to scratch.
But you fancy the Japanese for that?
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Meanwhile, simultaneously, it is, of course, Italy-Brazil. Italy-Brazil. Ooh. 9 World Cups between them, these two.
Yep.
Woof.
Yeah, should be fantastic. I mean, it's probably as... Paul just mentioned to me it's another excuse to use the word ersat, I think.
Sat.
Ersatz.
Oh, ersatz.
You dropped it into conversation in the first place.
Yeah, well, we used that one. It's your own word.
Because Carlos Alberto scored that goal against Italy, didn't he?
He certainly did in 1970.
Yes.
But there's another clash between these two, which is perhaps equally as relevant. 1982, Italy's 3-2 defeat of the Seleção.
Which Rossi, of course,
exactly, on their way to that World Cup win, but it was the last time they beat them.
Was it really?
Last time Italy beat Brazil.
Now, that was a good World Cup, wasn't it?
Yeah, fantastic World Cup.
Yep.
Indeed.
Anyway, this is a big game as they go, because it sorts out who plays Spain, probably, almost certainly Spain, in the next round, and who doesn't. So what do you think, Scott?
Well, I mean, I'm guessing they'll both go for it, because there's no point trying to sit back for a, you know, to scrape a 1-0. But I mean, I just wonder how important it is to avoid Spain. Spain are obviously the hot favourites for the tournament, but they managed, I forget, was it the States that knocked them out in the last Confederations Cup in the semi-final stage?
I think you're right.
I think that might be the case. But, I mean, just because this isn't, it's not like a high-octane tournament in the sense where they're going to be both be going for 100%. Brazil might, there might be a little bit of them thinking, yeah, it'll be a good thing to play Spain in tournament conditions, sort of semi-tournament conditions, a year before the World Cup, because they may well have to do it in the real thing next year. Mm. So I don't think either of the teams are going to be thinking, this will be the worst thing if we lose this game and have to play Spain in the next round. Well, if they have to do that, that's probably going to be a good thing as well, which means that hopefully we'll get a nice free-flowing 0-0.
Right, okay. Neymar versus Balotelli.
Indeed. Yeah. And Balotelli's been pretty good, hasn't he? I mean, away from his woes in Italy, you know, it's kind of he's looked impressive.
Which woes are they? Oh, the racism thing.
Yeah.
I mean, in football terms, he's been doing great there, and he's looked brilliant. I think for Italy in terms of mentality, terms of fitness, in terms of his play as well.
There's been quite a few of the big players in this tournament that have turned up and performed really well. I mean, Owen mentioned Honda in that 4-3 game during the week. He was unbelievably good in that game, and Japan could have quite easily won that match by a goal or two themselves, just depending on the way things ran out. So,
what about big names turning up and playing? Neymar ending his goal drought in fantastic fashion in the opening game, sorting one out and scoring another in the second game, and he's been looking brilliant. Now, we had a little bit of a difference of opinion about this in the pod yesterday. Where do you stand on the Neymar issue?
I think he's looked great. Yeah, he's looked great, and you know, kind of. If all the questions that were there at the beginning of the summer with his move to Barcelona and all the rest of it, he's gone some way to answering some of them, I think.
Mm, absolutely, Paul.
I still think it's too early.
Too early?
Yeah, I still think it's too early. I don't think these. It's not the high octane that Scott was demanding of a tournament. Right. I think the bar will be set higher. But he will be given closer attention, and we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Italy treat him, how they deal with him, because who have Brazil played yet? So far, I mean, defensively, Japan and Mexico, neither of them the strongest. I know that the Italians have had all sorts of ricks in the first couple of games, but it will be interesting to see what kind of treatment Prandelli is reserving for Neymar, who's pretty much, I think I'm right in saying, the key to certainly in the second game. Oscar was maybe equally decisive in the first one, but
I think it looks relaxed, Neymar, which I think is interesting. You know, it was interesting in that friendly against England, but it looked like every time he got the ball, he wanted to score from 45 yards. Whereas these two games, he's felt as though he's, you know, a lot more comfortable. Maybe that goal after 3 minutes in the first game helped sort of settle him, if you like.
Yeah, very possibly. Brazil yet to concede in this tournament. Italy yet to not concede in this tournament, and their shaky defence, as I say, will be further unnerved by the absence of De Rossi in front of it this time. He's suspended, and apparently, although this isn't confirmed, Pirlo's going to be missing as well with a calf injury for Brazil. Paulinho's out. They're not going to risk him ahead of the semi-finals, so it looks like the prophet Hernandez will come in his place. I think Hernandez has looked good so far for Brazil. Anyway, all very interesting. All very interesting. That's Saturday night for you. What are you going to be doing?
Is it also the final of The Voice?
I don't know.
Yeah, it is. It could be a tough clash. I think because all the mentors, they sing with their mentees on the stage.
Right.
Is that a word, mentees?
Yes, there is, actually. Because if there's a mentor, there is also somebody who's receiving the mentoring, and that person is generally the mentee.
Okay. Nah.
But yeah, I think I'm going to go out for a bit of dinner on Saturday.
All right. Where are you going, Paul?
I'm probably local.
Why don't you hit some churrascaria, and then you can have the telly on and get a bit of Seleção kind of
great idea.
Because
I really like. I've never been to one where you have the green and the red. Yeah. I really want to do that.
Right, cool. Okay, that's you sorted. What about you, Scott?
I'm going to bed at 10.
Brilliant. It's the new going out. And Owen?
Well, I've got the kids all day, so I'll probably be nodding off on the sofa about.
All right,
the same
I'm going to watch that
excited,
football,
that?
And I'm going to tell you all about it. On Saturday night, actually. Saturday night, but you won't get it till Sunday morning because we're a bit slow like that. And hopefully you'll join us for that anyway. In the meantime, have a terrific time, all of you. Thanks for coming in. Scott Murray, Paul McInnes, and Owen Gibson, and producer Ben. Super weekend to you all. Bye-bye for now.
CCFD with AC Jimbo. Worth.